In Randolph County and from us around, everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio Ransparta means WHCO.
Hi, folks, on the go, it's 1230.
That's WHBO.
We love to have you with us. We want you all to know you're welcome on WHCO, Randolph County Radio.
From Rio Country, 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll-free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
Good morning. This is the People Speak. I'm Jeff. We're talking today with Senator Paul Shemp.
Morning, Jeff. Happy to be in the studio with you.
Another Friday.
It is, and, you know, there's been a lot going on. The Illinois Senate was back in session this week. I think probably the first thing that I'd like to talk about, though, is some local developments, something that I've been talking about with you for the last couple years here at WHCO. As we've mentioned, the Southwest Illinois Connector, a proposed four-lane highway that would potentially connect Carbondale with the Metro East. Really, the biggest local news that I have is the task force to try to analyze, assess, and make the arguments why this highway should become a reality. That task force had its first meeting on March 1st at the shooting complex. That was something that I think is important. And I get it. People have said, you know what, this highway has been talked about for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it going to be any different this time? I think we have two things that are going for us this time around. First, in previous discussions about this highway have always been top-driven. They've been IDOT's proposals. It's really been a top-down process. What we're talking about this time is the opposite of that. The only reason we're having this discussion is because of really some great work by the four-county coalition that had looked at the highway. Mark Kena and Mayor Will Stevens, they had done some great grassroots organizing work, really built up support for this proposal. You know, this is something that is being pushed for by the grassroots. It's not something that's coming down from the top levels of state government. And we are at a point in time right now when the state of Illinois is going to spend money on infrastructure. There is going to be a capital bill. Everybody recognizes across the political spectrum, doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican or somewhere in between, everybody recognizes that we are overdue to spend some money on our infrastructure in Illinois. So I feel confident that there is going to be some type of a capital bill. Now, the size of it and exactly how it's going to be paid for, those are other questions. But I'm confident that there will be a capital bill. So I think our timing is good. I think that this highway proposal stands its best chance now that it's ever had.
I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take a quick break here, and we'll come back and talk some more with Senator Paul Shemp. You're listening to The People Speak on Real Country 1230 WHCO. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is The People Speak. We're talking today with Senator Paul Shemp. And you were talking about the Southern Illinois Connector Group that had met March 1st. And this is a group, as you said, that's working on the four-lane connector highway.
Right. And the membership of the task force is composed of 15 members. Each house of the Illinois legislature, each party in each house has a representative that can be appointed. So that's four members there, the Senate Democrats, the Senate Republicans, the House Democrats, House Republicans. Those are four seats. Then the four counties impacted, each county board has a seat at the table. So that takes us up to eight. And then there's some other advocacy groups that are participating. There's a representative from the Illinois Municipal League. There's a representative from the Illinois Realtors. There's a representative from the Farm Bureau. There's also a representative from the Illinois Department of Transportation. So it's a group that's going to be looking to gather information. The meetings that we're going to have are going to be open to the public. This first meeting that we had, it was open to the public as well, but nobody came because we weren't really doing anything substantive. What we did at the first meeting was we just took attendance to make sure that the groups groups that had seats at the table for this task force that they had made their appointments. And then the members of the task force elected Mark Kena as its chairman. A lot of people thought that when I got this legislation through the Illinois General Assembly, they assumed that I was the one that was going to be leading this task force. And the reason that I did not want to do that is because one of the lessons that I have learned in my life is that when you have a project that needs consensus in order to become reality, it can't be political. So if this highway proposal ever became known as Senator Paul Shemp's Republican Highway, or if it got known as Representative Jerry Costello's Democrat Highway, if it became political, it would not be able to develop the kind of consensus that it's going to need to be successful. So I intend to support these meetings. My office, my staff is going to be providing administrative support. I'm going to come and, you know, give my thoughts and cast my votes. But I was really happy that the task force chose Dr. Kena as its chairman. He's been one of the heavy lifters with the grassroots coalition. He's had a number of years invested in this project, and I think he's going to do a good job. We need to gather up the information, we need to pick a route, and then we need to be making the case for why this is good, not only good for southwestern Illinois, but for the state of Illinois as a whole. You know, because resources are scarce in the state of Illinois. But I think you can make an argument that this is really going to set the conditions that are necessary for economic expansion in southwestern Illinois. I think this project would do wonders for the shooting complex. I think it would be tremendous for SIU Carbondale. I think it would allow the Kaskaskia Regional Port District to really expand their operations. So I think that this is something that's necessary. And over the next 5 months or so, this task force is going to be meeting, coming up with a route, and then making the case for why the state of Illinois should invest some money in this highway.
And that's been one of the arguments for years, the talk about it, is this area is kind of lacking in four-lane access.
It is. You know, I went to law school at SIU Carbondale. My mom was terminal with cancer at the time, so I was making a lot of trips back home to Waterloo. And it does. It takes longer than it should to be able to get from Carbondale to the Metro East. When I talk with the admissions folks at Carbondale that are trying to get new students to enroll at the university, one of the things that they mention is a challenge is that a lot of the new students want to be close to a metro area. And I think that this four lane is really going to be necessary to help Carbondale going, you know, decades into the future. You know, we have to link Carbondale with the St. Louis metro area. I think that'll help Carbondale tremendously in recruiting and enrolling new students, because one of the things that I've learned since I became a state senator too is I firmly believe that we have almost a symbiotic relationship between SIU Carbondale and the Southern Illinois region. I think SIU Carbondale cannot be successful unless Southern Illinois is doing well, and vice versa. If SIU Carbondale is not doing well, that is going to be a tough blow for our region to recover from. Within the 58th Senate District, SIU Carbondale is the largest employer in the 58th Senate District. Number two is Continental Tire in Mount Vernon, and number three is Gilster Mary Lee here in Randolph County in Chester. SIU Carbondale means a lot to this region.
Right. The loss of any one of those three would be devastating to this region.
Oh, I know. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I was opposed to the minimum wage proposal, because I had some very in-depth discussions with the leadership of Gilster Mary Lee talking about, you know, how a minimum wage increase of the magnitude that the state of Illinois is going to engage in, how that's going to affect their operations. And it's, you know, that's something that, you know, it's been a couple of weeks now since the minimum wage vote, but I'm still seeing a lot of a fallout from that. I hear from a lot of people that are scared. And it really, I think it's unfortunate that we rush that increase in the minimum wage law through, you know, without a little bit more thought.
That's one thing I've heard too, as far as that talking about the minimum wage. You know, that's really designed to be a starting wage. It's not supposed to be a living wage.
It's not. And the governor, who I like on a personal level, his politics sure as heck ain't my politics, but, you know, I like him on a personal level. But one of the points that he has made is he said, well, you know, a job that's being done in East St. Louis should be paid as much as a job in Chicago. And, you know, that argument makes a little sense. But the two counter arguments are, one, this is not intended to be a wage that the family is going to live on. The minimum wage is typically offered to new employees. This is something that, you know, you offer this to individuals that are just coming into the workforce. The, the classic example is the high school student that's working at a fast food restaurant. When you raise that, you get rid of these transitional jobs. That's going to have a negative effect. The other problem with what Governor Pritzker's argument is about, you know, saying that, oh, we need to pay East St. Louis the same as Chicago is, you know, the jobs may be the same, but the cost of living is certainly different. It is not even remotely close. The cost of living in Chicago is much, much higher than the cost of living in downstate Illinois. There's not a need for a $15 an hour minimum wage in southern Illinois because our cost of living is much less. And this isn't, these are not jobs that are intended to be the jobs that are, well, that are going to support families. These are mostly traditional jobs, transitional jobs where you're having people come into the workforce and then they work their way up.
And if that's your starting wage, you know, beyond that gets, can be astronomical.
Well, there's a cascading effect then too, because okay, if you say okay, everybody is going to make this amount, well, the people that, you know, if you had people that were making that lower than that previously, if you're bumping them up, you need to bump up the people that are in leadership positions who are already making more. You can't just say, okay, guess what? Now everybody just makes the same. So there's cascading effects. I've talked with owners of restaurants, some of the franchises around here, you know, just very concerned about this. And what was distressing is really this was pushed through very, very fast. I don't know why we needed to do it so fast. They said we needed to be able to make a budget projection. Well, there's a lot of hypothetical things that were put into the governor's budget proposal. He balanced the budget based on some additional taxes that he would like that haven't been passed yet. You know, this idea that we had to push the minimum wage through in order to be able to have a budget address delivered, that just didn't make logical sense to me.
You had mentioned the governor's tax proposals. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, he has his proposed budget, which his budget is a starting point for negotiations. He didn't say, take it or leave it, my way or the highway. So I give him credit for that. He's calling for discussions based on his initial proposal. He says he wants a bipartisan budget, so that attitude is welcome. I do think, though, that it's problematic that he's already proposing tax increases in this new budget because we just had a massive tax increase two summers ago. You know, and that was something that I voted against. At the time, I realized that, you know, we had this gaping hole in our budget, and I would have been willing to consider voting for a tax increase if, and this is the big if it had been tied to reforms that were going to generate economic growth. I had made a promise when I was asking my constituents for this job. I had said, I'm not going to vote for a standalone tax increase. And unfortunately, that's what I got to vote on. So I voted no on that massive tax increase. But that huge tax increase 2 years ago was supposed to get our financial house in order. And it hasn't even been 2 years, and we're already talking about raising more taxes. So some of the more creative tax proposals that the governor is talking about is he's talking about a tax on plastic bags, you know, like 5 cents a bag on plastic bags. If you buy your groceries at a store and you get five plastic bags, you're going to get charged 25 cents. So you have that tax. And then the governor spent an awful lot of his time in his budget address talking about a switch to a progressive income tax, you know, that is going to basically be the thing that is going to allow us to pay for everything, is this change from a flat tax rate to a progressive tax rate. And I really think until we have tried to cut spending, I think we have a moral obligation to try to cut spending before we try raising people's taxes again. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, we can't cut, it's too hard, it's, you know, there's nothing left to cut, there's no waste. Well, you know what? There is still waste. And I'll believe there's no waste when we stop wasting money. And we did. The last budget that we passed had almost $200 million for the President Obama Library. That, to me, is wasteful spending. So to me, I think it really is, it's too early to be talking about another tax increase.
All right, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take our second break here, and we'll come back and talk some more with Senator Paul Shemp here on The People Speak. You're listening to Real Country 1230 WHCO. And welcome back. Again, this is The People Speak. I'm Jeff. We're talking with Senator Paul Shemp. We've been talking about the Southwest Illinois Connector Group that met, and also some tax proposals that have been talked about in Springfield. And you also mentioned earlier the governor's budget proposal.
You know, we talked about that a little bit, and I sat and listened to the governor's budget address, and it was a good speech, and it was well given. But I think if you peel back the layers and you think about what the governor said, there were some items in that speech that really, to me, showcased the difference in thought between the two political parties. And the governor started out his speech talking a lot about trying to learn from the mistakes that have been made in the past. And then he went through what he thought was going to be the solution to our budget challenges that we face in Illinois. And his solution to everything is this, what he's calling a fair tax now. It's a progressive income tax. But it's the idea is what we have in Illinois right now is we have, you know, by our Constitution, we're required to have the same income tax rate for everybody, a flat rate. The General Assembly can raise or lower that rate, but it has to be the same for everybody. And what Governor Pritzker wants is he wants the ability to change the rate up. And the standard phrase that we hear from all Democrat progressive candidates is make the rich pay their share, make the rich pay more. And the problem winds up being, well, how do you define rich? Do you define rich as somebody that brings in over $30,000 a year? Do you say over $50,000? Is it over $70,000? And we don't know that. We have not seen that proposal yet. And one of the problems with allowing a progressive tax rate is you just don't know. You're unable to predict with any certainty, you know, as a business person making decisions, what the tax rate is going to be.
Right.
Now, if Illinois is going to switch from a flat income tax rate to a progressive tax rate, it's going to take a constitutional amendment to do that. And a constitutional amendment, the way that process works is the proposed amendment has to get 3/5 of the votes in each chamber, and then it has to go to the voters, and the voters have to approve it in a constitutional amendment. So if you're frustrated and scared about the talk of a progressive income tax, you as a voter will have the final say on this, you know, and I would expect that to be on the ballot in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. Is probably the voters will get to have the final say. But to me, the biggest, you know, thing that was most illuminating about the governor's speech is he talked about spending more money, and he talked about taxing. The thing that was almost non-existent in Governor Pritzker's speech was there was very little about spending cuts, and there was very little about economic growth. Now, he did touch on those just briefly, and I'll summarize what he said. When he was talking about spending cuts, he pointed out that of the state's $39 billion that he expects to spend, only $19 billion is really available for us to adjust the level of spending. Of our $39 billion, the governor says that $20 billion is automatically going out the door, mandatory payments, no matter what we do. So it's really, of the 39, we only have 19 to play with, whether we increase or decrease spending. And the governor pointed that out, and then he basically said, it's going to be too tough to cut spending, so we can't do it. And I think that's the wrong attitude to have. I really do think that, yes, it's going to require difficult choices. Yes, it's not going to be easy. But as I touched on earlier, I really do feel like we, as elected officials in the General Assembly, have a moral obligation to try to cut spending before we try to raise taxes again. And so far, I'm not seeing any efforts to really cut spending. And I think the last budget that we had, which I did vote for because, you know, the alternative was either that or another impasse, but that budget contained what I considered to be wasteful spending. And I talked about it earlier. You know, there was money in there for the Obama Presidential Library. You know, and if Illinois is in an economic emergency, we do not need to be spending that kind of money. We do not need to be increasing our levels of spending if we are in a financial emergency. So, you know, it was interesting that the governor just said, no, it's going to be too tough. Let's not do it. The other thing that was interesting is he talked very little about economic growth. And really what he did mention economic growth, but the economic growth that he mentioned was by increasing spending on K through 12 education and higher ed. He said that that's going to lead to economic growth. That was the only time he mentioned economic growth in his budget address. And I think that just really illustrates the difference between the two parties, because I believe that economic growth comes through the private sector. I think we need to have reforms that will make job creators want to come to Illinois, stay in Illinois. You have economic growth through the private sector instead of, you know, the governor believes that you need economic growth through increased government spending. So to me, that really encapsulated right there the difference between the two political parties.
Right. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time here, but Senator, thanks for stopping in.
Well, you're welcome. I always enjoy coming in and talking with you, Jeff.
All right. We'll talk to you again next month, maybe find out a little more about what's been going on in Springfield since things are starting to...
Well, I'm carrying a lot of bills this spring, so we'll definitely have some updates the next time we talk.
All right. For the People Speak, I'm Jeff. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Have a great day.